I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings,
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legend podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I'm your host, John Hansen, and on today's show, we have a bodybuilder from the 1980s who was really spectacular when he made his debut. His name is Dale Ruplinger. And Dale burst upon the national scene in 1982. He went into the very first NPC USA Championship, which I believe was in Las Vegas, as it is now. And Dale, as a middleweight, won the overall title. And he just blew everybody away, and he got a lot of attention. And then in a couple months later, he went into the very first NPC Nationals, which was held in New York, and won, of course, by Lee Haney. But Dale, again, won the middleweight class. And then Dale went over to the World Championships, the Mr. Universe, which was held in Bruges, Belgium that year. And he won again the middleweight class. So Dale had an unbelievable year in 1982 and got a really interesting story. He's a very intense guy. I think you guys are going to really love this interview. So we're going to talk to Dale in a minute. And before we get to that interview, I want to also mention that we are brought to you by our main sponsor, which is Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner called Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Benoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, so how's everybody doing out there? Is the weather getting a little colder where you are? I'm in Tampa, Florida, and it's actually even getting a little colder out here. We've had like 50-degree weather the last couple of days, so that's a change for us, but I think it's supposed to be back up into the 80s by the end of the week, so it doesn't get cold very long out here in Florida, but I've seen around on the news around the country, it's getting really, really cold. Let's see, what's going on? Lee Haney, of course, had his 60th birthday last week on November 11th. I think I mentioned that last week, but I want to wish the great Lee Haney another happy birthday, and I hope he had a great day. He seems like he's very, very happy, very healthy. Lee is an amazing person, and I wish him all the best. And one of my best friends from Chicago, Dennis Durkin, had his 60th birthday also on the 13th, 2 days later. So I don't know if Dennis listens to the show at all, but I want to wish my friend Dennis a happy birthday. They had the Natural Olympia competition yesterday out in Las Vegas. And big Rob Perry, I don't know if you guys follow natural bodybuilding at all, but Rob used to be a professional wrestler. Not with the WWE, but I think with someone else. But anyways, I've known Rob since I moved here to Tampa, Florida in 2010 because he was going to the powerhouse gym that I go to in downtown Tampa, which is closed now, but now they have the downtown. They have the Powerhouse Gym Athletic Club also in Tampa. Anyways, Rob was a gigantic, big man. He's got to be like 6'6", huge body, or not, pro wrestler, probably about 300 pounds. Well, now Rob has gone natural, and he won the Natural Olympia last year, a very dominating fashion, but he lost the title this year to another good friend of mine, Philip Ricardo. And for those of you that follow natural bodybuilding, Philip, I think, is probably one of the best, if not the best, natural bodybuilders ever. This guy is not a real big dude, but he is so shredded glutes, always comes in shape, and he has not competed for a few years, and he's a little bit older. I don't know how old Philip is. I think he's in his mid-40s because he went into the Pro Masters, and he won that, which I was expecting him to, but then he went into the Open, and he won that. And he beat big Rob Terry. So that was really a shock to Rob, I'm sure. But Philip, like I said, is one of the greatest bodybuilders ever, natural bodybuilders. He was winning when I got out of the sport around 2010, around there. And he is still dominating. So congratulations to him. He is a great guy, military guy, and Marine veteran, and just a really, really great person. So congratulations to him. All right, believe it or not, we got Thanksgiving coming up next week. That is unbelievable. The holidays are here, and this year has gone by really quick. We don't have a lot of guests coming up, so I might be putting together that anniversary show that I was talking about doing over the summer that I never had time to do. So maybe I'll be working on that the next couple weeks and get a couple anniversary shows up until we get some more guests. I've been working on Troy Zuccolato, and Troy sounds open to doing an interview. Having a lot of hard time getting these women bodybuilders. I reached out to Corey Everson this week. I also reached out to Carla Dunlap. Thanks to Sean Ray for giving those contact info on both of those ladies. But unfortunately, neither one has contacted me back. I've been trying to get Tanya Knight on the show, but she hasn't responded either. So my idea of getting the women bodybuilders on is not really working out. For some reason, they are not interested in doing interviews. But I'll just keep trying. But I don't know why we're having such a hard time with that. I did get a couple emails over the week from you guys. If you want to email me, my email address is naturalolympia@gmail.com. And I always appreciate your emails. First of all, I got an email from Pat Comer, who is one of our real good contributors to the podcast. And Pat said, great interview with Larry Bernstein. The prison inmates at Larry's early contest were probably coached by Ernie Franz. Ernie built weightlifting programs in the Illinois prison in the late 60s and 70s. Ernie took me to my first powerlifting bodybuilding contest in the mid-70s with his Stateville lifters there. They were pretty intimidating to this 11-year-old. And Pat posted this picture of Ernie Franz, who is a powerlifting legend, and he's from the Chicago area, with all these guys from Stateville prison. So thanks to Pat for that. Also got a letter all the way from the UK, Martin Stone. And Martin says, hi, John, I love the podcast. I look forward to downloading it every week so I can listen to it on my commute. Your Larry Bernstein interview was excellent. Larry seems like a great guy who, despite having an awesome physique in his competitive years, remains refreshingly modest, giving his fellow competitors credit where due. Martin Stone from Bristol, England. All right. Thank you, Martin, for that email. All right. So thank you for your emails, guys. Like I said, if you have any emails or suggestions, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And I do have my new website up, as I mentioned last week. It's called johnhansonfitness.com. So if you guys are looking for training or diet consultations, just go to johnhansonfitness.com and you can fill out a questionnaire and I will help you guys on that. We're going to have a special deal on that program in lieu of the holidays, so you can get a discount. So stay tuned to johnhansonfitness.com. And you can check that out. I want to mention one of my clients. His name is Anwar, and he is getting in shape. He was a graduate student, I believe, at Brown University. He just moved down here to Florida, and he was over 300 pounds. He like 320. So he's lost like 20 pounds so far in like only a month. So congratulations to him. He's really sticking with the program. And I'll keep you updated on his progress because he's doing fantastic. He's a nice young man, and hope he gets in shape. And he's really just following the same program I gave him that I give a lot of people, which is basically just a bodybuilding weightlifting program and some cardio and the diet, which is the key, of course. And he's really determined to make this work. So congratulations to him. He realizes that he wants to stay in shape at his age because he's way overweight for his age. So good job. All right. Before we get to our interview with Dale Ruplinger, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by our other sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, which is 813-922-8939, or you can go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. Tell them you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you 20% off your first order. Plus, they'll give you a free consultation on what they think you should do. All right, so that is our opening. Here is our interview with the great Dale Ruplinger. You guys are really going to enjoy this. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a special guest with us this week. His name is Mr. Dale Ruplinger, and Dale was the middleweight winner at the 1982 Nationals, the very first Nationals, and then he went on to win the World Championships, and he was also the overall winner that year of the Mr. USA. So welcome to the show, Dale. It's great to talk to you.
Well, thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just talking off the air, and I said I saw you compete at the Central USA back in 1981, because that was out here in Illinois where I was from, and everybody was really impressed with you. That was a really tough show back then, wasn't it, for a regional-level show?
I thought so. You know, it had some pretty quality people in it. You know, Corey Everson, she won the women's division in the overall.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, like I said, her husband, Jeff, won the heavyweight division, and at that time was riding for Muscle and Fitness with Joe Weider. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to beat Jeff out for the overall as a middleweight. So
yeah.
It was a great competition. And, you know, Corey and I, you know, from that point forward had kind of a bond. She won the women's, I won the men's, and obviously her career did a heck of a lot better than mine ended up, but it was a great evening overall.
Yeah. Well, Dale, let's start at the beginning. How did you get involved with weight training and then eventually getting into bodybuilding?
Well, in the beginning, my brother Dan, who was in high school at the time, started to lift some weights in my father's garage, kind of set up shop in there. And I used to tell my brother if he turned sideways in class, they'd count him absent. He was so skinny when he started. Literally, I could almost, my whole hand could almost go around his bicep when he was in high school. But
wow.
He started hitting the weights, and I started seeing some changes in him. And, you know, that wasn't the thing that originally got me to decide to do it, though. It actually, on my 24th birthday, I was given a book, and it was called Winning Bodybuilding by Franco Colombo.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah. It was first
and
book.
It was a great book. And that night, I read the book from cover to cover, and every page that I turned, you know, I thought to myself, I can do this. You know, I really could do this. By the time I had gotten to the end of the book, I was convinced that I could do it. And you know, sometimes in your life, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And
yeah,
I was at a point in my life where I was ready, and the book convinced me by the way that Franco laid it out, from a beginner bodybuilder to an intermediate bodybuilder to advanced bodybuilder, the nutrition, how he set up the workouts, how he went from one exercise to another, and why. Most things in life are just common sense. And, you know, the common sense told me that this was doable. And I came from a background where I started out in grade school. I started at a Catholic's grade school. It was called St. Paul's in Davenport, Iowa. And every friend that I had in my life went to that school, and there were six of us kids, and going to a Catholic high school was going to be kind of cost prohibitive to my parents, so they thought that I'd have to go to the public school at that time. And I begged my dad, I begged him to let me go to the Catholic school, the Assumption, where all my friends were going to go. And they had a program at the school where you could clean classrooms after school and empty out trash cans, and it would help you pay for half of your tuition for the kids.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah, but for the kids who really didn't have the means to make it on their own. So I talked my dad in. I told him I'd do that, you know, if he'd pay the other half, if I could go to Assumption. And he agreed to that. So honestly, while I was cleaning classrooms and emptying trash cans, other kids were going out for sports. And there were a lot of sports, you know, I couldn't go out for because, well, I was cleaning school.
Right.
So I always told myself that, you know, I could be good at a sport if I had the opportunity. And finally, the senior year, my dad let me play football. He said, you don't have to do it anymore. Like, the team isn't already picked. senior year.
You're
but
right.
I did play every game. I did play every game and that, but I still had that burning desire, and I found myself at 24, not having done it, not having tested myself or proven to myself that I could. And there's kind of this hole that, you know, I just really couldn't fill. And I thought that point and period in my life that had passed me by, but bodybuilding was a sport that all it took was me and the weights and some knowledge, and I could do it. So that's how I got started. And over the next 2 weeks, I told all my friends and family members, I told them that in 2 years I'd be Mr. Iowa, and someday I'd be Mr. America. And
wow,
I'd never lifted a weight at that point. I was riding Harleys and drinking beer at that point.
Oh, really? So, okay, yeah. I was going to ask you what you did after high school.
Yeah, so everybody laughed at me. Seriously, everybody laughed at me. But I put Franco's book underneath my arm, and the next Monday I headed down to the Davenport YMCA, and I started lifting, and, well, the rest is history.
Wow. So you had this desire inside you the whole time. And then you just saw this book, and then it just lit it, and you said, that's what I want to do.
Yep. And from that point forward, I trained about an hour and a half a day, and I probably read over 3 hours a day. Everything I could get my hands on in nutrition and health. And reading Muscle and Fitness from cover to cover and cover to cover again.
Right,
and,
right.
I read the Nutritional Almanac cover to cover.
It took
notes, so I had a whole binder of notes after doing that. I knew that nutrition would play a key role in getting me to where I wanted to be.
Yeah. So what was your physique like when you started, Del?
I had probably about I think I had like a 34 and a half inch waist, not quite a 35, you know. I would say that I always kind of had an athletic build. When I jumped on the scale, when I first started, I think my measurement around my waist was 34 and a half. And I think the scale was 165, and I'm 5'9". So, you know, that's where I started at.
So you said you started like an hour and a half a day, and how many days a week were you training in the beginning?
Six days. I always took Sunday off. I always needed mentally, physically, I needed one day for myself, you know, one day for my family.
Right.
One day that I could mentally relax and prepare for the next week. I knew I could train hard up to 6 days, but I knew that I needed one day to myself, one day to regroup.
So when you started training, Dale, did you do any shows in between that, you know, you said that you're going to win Mr. Iowa 2 years from then. Did you do anything before that, or did you just wait for that Mr. Iowa 2 years later?
Well, actually, I waited for the Mr. Iowa to come around, and that actually took about 2.5, almost 2.75 years for that time to cycle around again to the May of that year of 1980.
Okay.
And, so I'll have to take you back 1 year.
Okay.
In 1979, I went to watch my brother, Dan, who I told you was as skinny as a rail.
Right.
I watched him compete at the, went up to Cedar Rapids at Coe College and watched him compete for the Mr. Teenager, Mr. Iowa, teenage competition.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sitting out in the audience, and, you know, I've been training, you know, I've been training about a year and a half, close to about 2 years at this point. And I'm sitting out in the audience, and I'm watching my brother on stage, and I'm looking at the other competitors. And that morning I'd, you know, just had 4 eggs for breakfast and toast and juice. And, you know, I was sitting out in the audience, and I said to my brother, I says, "Hey, when you're done, give me your trunks." I says, "What the hell? I can do this." Now, you got to understand, I had a farmer's tan. I hadn't shaved.
Right.
I didn't have a routine down. I didn't know. I didn't even have music. I had nothing.
Yeah.
And I took home the third place trophy for Mr. Iowa in 1979.
Wow, that's crazy. Wow.
Now,
totally
I don't count. I don't count that as anything because that was just literally a fluke. And, you know, it's just off the cuff, and I went out and did it. But the competition I was really after was the 1980 of Mr. Iowa. And 2 weeks before that, there was the Junior Illinois.
Okay.
And I figured, you know, what the heck? It's 2 weeks before my competition. You know, why not go out for the Junior Illinois? It would give me an opportunity to, you know, practice my posing, you know, the mandatories, you
right.
know, get a little bit of time on stage under my belt before I competed for what I considered was going to be my first competition in my mind, which was going to be the Mr. Iowa.
Okay.
So I went to the Junior Illinois. I won the middleweight. I won the trophy for best abs, best arms, and best back.
Okay.
Tim Belknap won the trophies for everything else.
Oh, wow. And yeah, I remember that. That's when he came
Tim
out of the woodwork,
right? Yep. Tim Belknap was light heavy, and he won the overall.
Yeah.
Now, I'd never met Tim Belknap before that, and this was just kind of prep for me for the Iowa. But anyway, you know, I won those body parts trophies over Tim Belknap.
Mm-hmm.
And so 2 weeks later, I go to the Iowa. I walk in. I register. Head judge tells me I can't compete.
What?
Now, you got to imagine how frustrated I am because
It
took me 2.75 years to get here. This is what I'd spent the last 2.75 years of my life dedicated to, devoted to, and wanting to compete at this contest.
Mm-hmm.
This was my goal, John.
Right, right.
And they said I couldn't do it. I go, well, what? Why? Because you competed and won in another state, and you can only compete in one state a year and
really?
Be a winner.
Huh.
Yeah, that was the AAU rules.
Wow, I never even heard of
and
that.
And I begged him. I said, look, and I told him my story. I says, I got to compete at this contest. What can I do? He says, well, I'm going to make you sign a piece of paper. You're going to have to denounce your trophies and your title you're going to have to ship me those trophies and body part trophies.
Oh, my God.
And completely denounce that you won the junior Illinois middleweight. And then we'll let you compete at the Iowa. I said, done. Where's the papers?
Unbelievable.
So I sign the papers. I get in there. I start to warm up. I'm in a sweatsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Gromkowski is the guest poser.
Okay.
And Pete is sharing the same room, little kind of room that I set up for myself. He's in there with me. And I always, at that point in time, I brought my own weights and my own bench to the competitions because I didn't want anything to chance.
Yeah.
I wanted my own pieces of equipment to warm up with. I wanted to get my pump on. I didn't want to have to jack with anybody else. I was coming to win. And so right before the contest, I stripped down. And Pete Gromkowski looks at me and he says to me, "What the hell are you doing in Iowa?" I go, Pete, this is really my first competition here.
Yeah.
He goes, "You need to go straight to California." I go, Pete, I don't compete at this one for the night. And he says, "I'm telling you, you need to go to California."
Wow.
I says, "Well, I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me, Pete, coming from you. But I haven't even stepped on stage yet for the Iowa." He says, he looked at me, he goes, "No problem." So anyway, there was 36 contestants that competed at the Iowa, and I took the overall and won the competition that night. And Pete looked at me and says, "I told you." So that was the first, my first competition. The other one was completely taken away from me, so I'm not counting that one.
Right. How did Iowa go, Dale? How did that Iowa go? I mean, did you blow everybody away?
Well, I won the overall. I took it, and there was 1,500 people there that night at Coe College to watch me win the Mr. Iowa.
Wow, that's amazing.
It was a great moment. It kind of solidified for me that I was on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the competition that I had devoted, almost 3 years of my life to. And it meant a lot to me.
That's a great story. So after that, then, did the judges talk to you after that? I mean, the guys who were giving you a hard time about going in the show?
No, he really didn't.
Hmm.
He came up and congratulated me.
Uh-huh.
He said something like, "You made the right choice." And,
yeah.
and he says, "Congratulations," something to that effect.
I'm ad-libbing
it here, but it was something to that effect.
Yeah.
So, went back home, took a night off, had some pizza and beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was going to taste better than it did. It really didn't taste all that great. I don't know what the deal was.
Right.
You know, you always think it's going to taste great. You know, I deprived myself for 16 weeks. When I would get ready for a contest, I'd start 16 weeks out.
Okay.
I'd be completely clean, no alcohol, no nothing. And
uh-huh.
then I'd start dialing it down and into the competition. 2 weeks before the competition, I'm always at my lightest.
Mm-hmm.
Then I flutter carbs in on Sunday and Monday, and then I taper it off coming into a weekend to see what I'm looking like for a Friday
mm-hmm.
or Saturday. And then
mm-hmm.
I do it again for the next week. So I have 2 week cycles where I know where I'm hitting it on a Saturday or a Friday or a Saturday. I know what I'm going to look like just by the way I fluttered the carbs and got
right.
my body ready for the weekend.
Yeah.
So I never entered a contest where I was not on the money. This whole idea, well, God, you should have seen
right.
me the day after. You should have seen me the, you know, a week after.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't spend much time, really knowing
yeah.
yourself and knowing your body too well. If you're answering me in those terms that, you really look great you know, 2 days later or a week later. So,
yeah. How did you diet back then, Dale? Was it just high protein, low carbs, or were you eating carbs when you were dieting?
I ate it all. I ate, you know, all of it. I ate protein. Uh-huh. I ate, you know, the fat. I ate the simple carbs. I ate the complex carbs. Hmm. I never cut out anything completely, but I cut down. I keep my protein the same. I keep my fats the same. And I'd lower my complex carbohydrates and my simple carbohydrates as I came into a competition.
Okay.
And, you know, so I never totally eliminated complex carbs.
Uh-huh.
I never totally eliminated simple carbs. I knew my body needed them all. It was just what portion of that was correct.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, through doing that, I came to create a formula for every 10 pounds of lean muscle on my body. I knew how many calories, I knew how much protein, I knew how much simple carb, how much complex carb it took me to maintain that, and how I needed to adjust it to get leaner, but yet keep the same muscle mass and not look gaunt.
Yeah.
And I've used that formula in my training of other people. I still train people. I'm 66, but I'm still training people every day. And that formula that I used back then, as far as the nutrition, you know, I'm using with people today, and it's working as well today as it did, you know, for me back then, if they're willing to stick by it, pretty much. That's what
right.
it should be, you know.
What was your off-season weight, Dale?
My off-season weight would go to about 192.
Okay.
About 192, 190, 192. And then, you know, when I hit the competition, the night before, I'd always do a sauna to lose 4 pounds. I would go in the sauna, and then I'd take a cold shower, back in the sauna, take a cold shower, back in the sauna, till I dropped 4. I wanted all the water between my skin and muscle to be gone.
Okay.
And I wanted that to be as tight as possible. And so I'd always lose 4 pounds. I came in precisely at 173 and a half for the USA, 173 and a half for the Mr. America, and 173 and a half for the World Bodybuilding Championships in Bruges, Belgium.
Wow. Unbelievable. That's great.
Yeah, I nailed it. It absolutely every single time. So, you know, the next year I was getting ready for the Central USA, you know, and you know, that's where I won the overall also, you know, the next year, which was 1981. So 1980 was the Mr. Iowa. 1981 was the Central USA.
Yeah, I got to see you in that one. And I think everybody in Illinois was really impressed with you. We were all like wondering where you came from. And
Iowa.
Yeah. How was Jeff Everson in that show? Was he good competition?
Well, yeah, you know, I'd seen and heard about Jeff in Muscle and Fitness, for God's sakes, you know.
Yeah.
Here I am. It's just my second competition, and I'm going up against this guy. I didn't, you know, I felt confident in myself. I knew what I brought. I knew I was as balanced as I could have my body. I knew there was no one more cut than I was.
Right.
So I felt good going into the competition, you know, but then again, you know, you're going up against Jeff Everson, and, you know, he's pretty well known. So
yeah,
what weight does that carry into a competition?
Yeah. Yeah.
So coming out of that and winning the overall, really, really helped, solidify, my confidence in not only winning my class, but winning overalls. So,
yeah. Plus, you were a middleweight, Dale. I mean, you're winning the overall at these shows, and you're only a middleweight. So, usually, it's the heavyweight or the light heavyweight that would win these shows. So, that was unusual too.
Yeah, you know, that was something that I always felt a lot of pride about by being a middleweight. And
yeah. Absolutely.
Being able to knock, you know, off some big guys. So, Yeah. I felt that I was on my way, you know, at that point.
So after you win that Central USA, then was the plan then next year you're going to go for the USA and the Nationals?
Yeah. Honestly, I was looking at the America,
right.
Mr. America, and you know, this Mr. USA came up, and I went, "What the hell? Let's do them both."
Yeah.
You know, let's do the USA, and then you know, then I'll go on. I think it was about a month or so later is going to be the Mr. America. So I never heard of the Mr. USA before.
Oh, really?
And that's okay. That's how naive I was to bodybuilding.
Right.
You know, I'd never heard of it, the Mr. USA.
Yeah.
So it was being put on by Gold's Gym. It was being held at Caesar's Palace.
Right.
And I realized that this was the big stage.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This was going to be the big stage. So I went into it starting 16 weeks out, you know, with the same determination and the same drive. At a body weight of 182 pounds, I was squatting 635s for two reps to parallel.
Wow.
I'd start off with 315 on the bar and squat it 25 times for my warm up, and then I'd either add 25s or 45s. If the 25s were on, I pull the 25s off and add 45s. 45s were on, I add 25s. I pull the 25s off and I add 45s. So I worked my way up from 315 to 635s, and you know, I pumped that out for two reps to parallel. My dad took pictures of it just actually a month ago. I was going through some old pictures at my parents' house, and I found a picture of my brother Spot and me doing 635. I never really realized I had a picture of it, and it meant a lot to me to find that picture. You know, people can talk shit all the time,
right?
But you know, it's nice to have the proof.
Yeah.
So.
Send me that picture. I'd love to see that.
I trained really, really, really hard for that competition, and trained heavy. Really
was
worked
your,
at it.
Was all your training heavy, Dale? Like in all your body parts, everything was pretty heavy, huh?
Yeah. I was training pretty heavy. You know, for my body weight. You know, I was, you know, doing bent over rows with 275 and straight bar. And, you know, one-arm rows with, you know, 120s, 130s.
Yeah.
You know, squats with working up to 635. I did every workout to the wall.
Yeah.
And every workout was a battle. Every workout was a battle between me and the weights. I knew exactly what I lifted the time before. I didn't need to write stuff down. I didn't need to create a journal. It was in my head. I knew exactly what I had done. And so I lived it and sleeped it. My philosophy, what drove me and what helped me throughout my career, I guess I kind of stumbled on it by accident, or maybe fear. Let me use the word fear. Every workout and every day, I attacked the day as though I needed to do absolutely everything I needed to do in that day to be successful. I did not allow myself the pleasure of a negative thought. I did not allow myself the pleasure of not doing one thing. I did everything that I knew and could do in that day for me to be successful. Everything.
Wow.
I don't care if I was sick. I don't care if I was hurting. I did what I needed to do in that day to become successful. And the reason I did that, John, was out of fear. And it was the fear of failure.
Wow.
It was the fear that if I failed not to do that last set or that last rep, if I failed not to do that last set of abs, if I failed not to do one thing, I didn't want to create a smidgen of doubt in my mind that I might not do it the next week, or I might fail to do it the next month.
Yeah.
So I never allowed myself that crack in my armor that I failed to do something. So it gave me such a strong mental attitude that I never succumbed to it, that I did that out of fear of knowing what human frailties are, and not to allow that to enter my thought. So
where do you think this fear came from? Where did this fear come from, Dale? Was it just because you had spent all those years in your youth, like kind of building up that desire to do something, and then when you finally had the chance to do it, you were going to go all out and do it?
Yeah, so I believe that was it. I guess through the time of going through high school and that, you know, I would tell myself that I could be great at something, but you know, after you tell yourself for that for so long, you know, you say, well, you know, you're really kind of living a lie, aren't you? I mean, you really never actually went out and did anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had to prove to myself that I had to create I wanted to be a positive person. I wanted to know who I was. I wanted to challenge myself to find out what kind of depth and what kind of character and what kind of person I was and what kind of drive I was. You know, I wanted to find those things out. I didn't want to go through life just existing. I wanted to see what I was made of. I wanted to challenge myself in those ways to find out who I was.
Yeah.
And you can't do that doing it half-ass.
Yeah.
You're either in or you're out. And if you're in and you did it all and you worked everything you could do to make yourself successful and you failed, okay, then you could hold your head up high.
Yeah.
But if you didn't, if you didn't, what are you left with? What are you really left with?
Right.
And so, you know, that's what drove me. So that's what was driving me getting ready, you know, for the USA.
Yeah. So when you won that show, Dale, how did you feel afterwards? Because I'm looking at the list here now online. I mean, in the heavyweight class, Bob Parris and Mike Christian were in that show. And, you know, Glenn Kinnear was in the light heavyweights. He went on to win the Mr. America a couple years later. And you beat all these guys. So how did that feel?
I believe that Charles Glass was in the middleweight competition, who had previously won the Mr. America middleweight the year before that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I had to go up against a guy in my class that had already won the Mr. America.
Right.
So that's what I had to deal with. So anyway, Gold's Gym put on a great competition. They had a lot of equipment in the back room, which I was thankful for, because nobody pumps up like I pump up, I don't think. I mean, from my picture, if you took a picture of me walking into the gym and you took a picture of me after my workout, you'd swear to God there was 2 years difference in my physique. It was just me. It's just, you know,
wow,
my
really?
Ability to be able to pump.
Yeah.
And so I came in and, you know, I'd gone through my 16 weeks. The night before I'd taken my sauna, I'd lost the 4 pounds. I sucked on a couple slices of oranges that night. And in the morning I started drinking water, you know, like I would normally do. You know, I probably drank about a gallon of water, you know, but I didn't force it down, but I just kept drinking. When I came in to get ready for the pre-judging, I came in with my sweats on and everything, and I opened up my bag, got out my towel, and, you know, arranged a few weights,
kind of pulled out a bottle of wine, uncorked it, put my glass on the table there, and did a few sets, sipped a little wine, did a few more sets, sipped a little bit more wine, you know, because I'd made weight in. And I hadn't had any alcohol in my system for 16 weeks. Mm-hmm. And, John, the day of the competition for me is a day of celebration. How I always looked at it. It was my day. I trained for this day for a year. I went through brick walls for this day. Right. I worked my ass off for this day. This was my day to show the world what I have accomplished, and it was fun. It was a celebration of life for me. And so drinking some wine made my veins stand out like garden hoses. It relaxed me. It was a celebration. And as I looked around that room where everybody else back there was pumping up, I could see people with hands over their mouth looking at me and laughing and pointing at me and shit like that, because here I am drinking wine and I'm pumping up and I'm getting ready for this competition. And Mike Metzner and Ray Metzner were back there. And you know, like you said, Bob Paris, Mike Christensen, and all those guys.
Right.
And then we're ready to go out on stage, right? So I strip down, and Mike Metzner looks over at me, you know, after I've been drinking my wine and getting ready. I only had like a glass and a half, you know, it's not like I drank the bottle.
Right.
Mike Metzner looked over at me and he goes, "What class are you in?" I said, "The middleweight class." He goes, "There's no way. You're in the middleweight class?" I said, "Yeah, Mike, I'm in the middleweight class." "No way, you got to be a light heavyweight." "Mike, I weighed in at 173 and a half." He goes, "You got to have hollow bones." And that's where it came from, huh? That's when Mike nicknamed me the man with the hollow bones.
Right.
And him and Ray stood there and they laughed about it and they go, "You're the man with the hollow bones, because there's no way you can weigh 173 and a half. Well, maybe at that point I was weighing about 180. Who knows? 179, you know, 180. But I was pumped up by that point. My veins were standing out. I was cut to a shred. And, you know, so I went out on stage. I didn't have to do too many comparison poses.
Mm-hmm.
Then they just kind of sat me in the back and, you know, started, you know, comparing other people. I know it was compared against Charles Glass a number of times and, you know, a few of the other guys. And you know, after I was done, you know, I felt good about it. My parents were there and some of my friends. And so, you know, and after coming off the Central USA and beating Jeff, and, you know, I felt pretty good about my class. So, yeah, then comes the next day. This is the fun part, John.
Okay.
So the next day I'm running a little late. I'm about 10 minutes late getting back to the warm-up room. And, again, I've got another bottle of wine to open. And because, you know, it's a little celebration. I'm going to have another glass and a half or so. I'm going to get pumped up again. And, you know, I've been eating apple pie, and I've been doing all sorts of things. I've been having pasta and the whole bit, and now I'm cut as can be, because now my body's starting to get size, but, you know, the skin is still tight, and it's even making the cut stand out even more on my body. And I walk back in there, John, and I swear to God, about a third of those guys were drinking wine.
Oh, that's
a third of there was bottles of wine sitting around, and I just had a chuckle to myself, John, because the day before, who was this jerk with the wine backstage?
Right. Everybody was laughing at it.
Yeah, and I walk in there, and these guys are drinking wine, and I'm going, wow, they think that They think today is going to change it for them.
Yeah, right. Too late.
Yeah, oh, that's yeah. Great. But it was funny. It was truly comical. At that moment, I realized that, okay, I think they think I got a shot at this.
Mm-hmm, right. Everybody's imitating you.
Yeah. So anyway. So,
how did the overall pose down go, Dale?
Couldn't have gone any better. You know, here's something I probably needed to share with you. And whosoever might be listening to this. After about a year of training, when I first started out, after about my first year and a half, Arnold was putting on a seminar after the Mr. Olympia in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
And it was up in Muscle and Fitness, and you could send in your $125 or $175. I don't know what it was. It was either $120 or $175. And you could go to Columbus, Ohio, and for a half a day, you could spend it with Arnold and a few of the other bodybuilders that was going to do a seminar. And I always was underneath the belief that if you wanted to be the best, well, then you need to talk to the best. You need to find out what the best has been doing and learn from the best, because
right.
They've made trials and errors along the way. They've done all that. And I knew that if I would have that opportunity to learn from the best, well, that would cut down my time. That would take me to reach my goals and accomplish the things I wanted to accomplish. And, you know, Arnold was a god to me, you know, as far as that goes. And and so I drove up my car and I took all my own food with me and I spent it in the hotel and I watched the competition and afterwards I had my notebook and I was set. I was heading to, I was heading up and excited about the seminar. Now, John, when I walked into this room was a pretty good-sized room, and there was folding chairs everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there was less, John, there was less than 20 of us.
Wow, unbelievable.
20 of us. I looked around. I went, holy crap, am I early or what? Arnold walked into that room, and he carried on if the place was packed.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't deter Arnold one iota. Now, if that would have been me and I would have put that thing on, I would have been clearly disappointed.
Yeah.
But Arnold wasn't. And he went on and shared things with us and taught me, since we're such a small group, taught us about the biomechanics of a lift, where to focus, how to focus.
Wow.
What area, when you're working a two joint muscle group and you're working off the hinge was the shoulder and the first detached joint is the elbow, where to focus at, not teaching you not to push when you're doing a bench press, but to focus on your elbow and with your chest muscles, squeeze your elbows up and together, bring them in. Franco came up and talked about the mind to muscle connection.
Wow.
Following Arnold and talking about the biomechanics. Arnold talked about how weights, why we use weights is to create the most resistance against a fully contracted muscle, or why do it, where that angle should be, how that angle should be performed. The very things that he taught me on that day, I use with my clients still to today.
Wow. And no kidding.
In every book I've ever seen him write, I've never seen him talk about these things that he shared with us on that day.
Wow.
And then Franco talked about that. Frank Zane talked about mind to muscle connection and that. He was a little bit out there at that point for me. I was trying to gather it in, try feverishly light notes. You know, like I said, Arnold spent that half a day with me. I had a chance to tell Arnold. I says, look, my goal is that in the next year and a half, I want to win the Iowa. And then, you know, someday I want to, you know, win the Mr. America. And those are my goals. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. He seemed to take a liking to me. Kind of spent a little bit more time with me. I think he saw maybe in himself in me and my desire and determination. And I'll always be appreciative that he spent that time with me. So
that's
then
awesome.
The next year, I went back up for the Olympia again.
Mm-hmm.
And Arnold was down in the judging area. And I walked down and I came up to him. I had my notebook because I had about 100 questions. If I saw him, if I could, if I possibly could gain his attention, I had about 100 questions I wanted to ask him. And I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, Arnold, I says, do you remember me? He says, yeah, you're that kid from Iowa.
Oh, that's great.
So I says, yes. I says, Arnold, you know, would you mind? I've got a few questions that I've got questions about. Would you mind me asking you? And he says, no, go ahead, sit down. So I started asking Arnold the questions that I had in my notebook, and I was feverishly writing, and all of a sudden there was Boyer Coe on stage.
Yeah.
And I went, wow, Boyer Coe. I mean, I had his light blue tank top. You know that light blue shirt he had with the double bicep shot with the split biceps?
Right, right.
Oh, my God. And I said to Arnold, I says, I've always wanted to meet Boyer Coe. And Arnold looked at me and he goes, we'll go backstage and meet him. I says, you mean just go backstage? He goes, yeah, just walk backstage. If somebody stops you, tell him I sent you back there. I think he wanted me to get rid of me, honestly, John. I've asked him so many questions. I think he just said, hey, go see him. Yeah. So anyway, I walk backstage, and there's Boyer. And I walk up to him, and oh, my God, Boyer's a short guy.
Yeah.
I mean, Boyer's like 5'4".
Really?
You know, 5'5 at the max.
Uh-huh.
And I walked up to him and I go, Boyer, I've been a fan. I wear your tank top. I've always wanted to meet you. I've always admired you. And I shook his hand and you know, he smiled at me. And I says, Boyer, when I'm down there sitting with Arnold, I says, you look as big and as tall as everyone on stage.
Yeah,
I says, how do you do it? He says, well, I'm going to tell you a secret. When you're sitting in the audience, you're looking up. When the judges are judging where they're sitting, they're looking up.
Yeah.
He says, what I do, and I do it nonchalantly. He says, I take one step forward than everyone else. I don't make a big deal out of it, but I just inch my way out there. And when you look up from the stage, I look as tall as they do.
Yeah.
I went, holy crap. And John, I use that in every competition.
Oh, really? Use that same trick, huh?
I used it. I used the same thing. I always tried to be one step out ahead of the rest of the guys on the lineup.
Yeah.
Just enough to make me look as big or bigger as everybody else. And so when it came to the overall at the USA, I did the same thing. I took one extra step out and I won the overall there too.
What year was that Olympia that you went to, Dale? Do you remember? Was that like 76, 77?
Oh, gosh, yeah, 76, 78, 79.
Okay.
79. Yeah. 78, yeah. 79. And I had, It was neat. It was all inspiring to actually go to, you know, two of the real Olympias and, you know, actually, you know, watch these guys perform, hear the roar of the crowd. It was amazing. I had the opportunity to watch Ed Corney perform his posing routine.
Yeah.
And that guy brought the house down.
Right.
That was the most graceful, the most impressive posing routine that I ever seen in my life. And, you know, when I competed at the Olympia and we did that European tour in 1983, I had an opportunity to meet Ed, to talk with Ed, for Ed to share with me, you know, his thoughts on posing. And Ed, number one thing he said, you're always posing. He says, you're posing in between poses.
Yeah.
Remember that. You always plant your feet. You lock your knees. You work your muscles up from there. You're posing through the pose and into the next pose. It's just not one shot, then this shot, then that shot. It's all a pose. And so I had a great run, John. I learned from a lot of really amazing, amazing guys.
Yeah, the legends. That's great. That's incredible. Yeah. Now, after you won that USA deal, you obviously got magazine coverage and stuff. So what was that like? I mean, for obviously people knew about you now, where before you were just a state title winner or a regional level winner. So now you're a national title winner. You're Mr. USA. So how did that affect you?
Well, it really hadn't caught up. It didn't really catch up with me yet. You know, I had won it to, you know, the Mr. USA in the summer, but two months later, I was in another competition. It was the Mr. America.
Yeah, right.
You know,
the magazines
at Radio
probably City
Music Hall.
Yeah, yeah, so, you're right. Because the magazines probably take 3 months to come out. So by the time
they
came out, we were already at the national.
Nothing had showed up yet.
Right, right. Okay.
You know, it really hadn't. So, you know, when I went to the America, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, there was a number of judges who knew who I was.
Right.
But, hell, I don't think many of the athletes knew who I was at that time yet. Some of them probably at that point. Hell, I didn't know who Lee Haney was. Lee Haney didn't know who I was.
Right, right.
but it was certainly awesome going to the America at Radio City Music Hall, competing there. That was amazing. You know, winning my class at the America and getting ready to head to the universe in a week.
It was one week later, huh?
Yeah, it was a week later. They wanted us to be, you know, on, which was pretty smart on the American side to plan their competition for the America, which gets you to the universe at that point, or the World Bodybuilding Championships the very next week. So that was cool. So, you know, I don't mind going down in defeat to the world's greatest bodybuilder, 8-time
right.
winner Lee Haney. And, you know, Lee and I became friends. Him and his wife Shirley are just the I think the best ambassadors to our sport that we ever had. He's a man of faith and believes in God, and he's raised a beautiful family, and we couldn't have a greater person representing our sport as Lee did over
there. Yeah, I agree.
And I went out and I would, you know, spend time in California. I'd spend it with Shirley and Lee He loved to watch movies, man. Trained twice a day, but we ate and we watched movies and we trained again.
That's awesome.
But going with him and the team to the universe and doing that in Bruges, Belgium, winning the team trophy. For me, it was accumulation of a lifetime or last 5.5 years of my life to prove to myself to reach the goal that I had told my family and friends and everyone else that I knew that I was, you know, capable of doing. And then, to top it off by scoring a perfect score.
Oh, really?
Not only in the posing, not only in all the preliminary judging, but gain all first place votes in all the posing judging.
Wow, that's amazing.
From what they told me, I was the first ever to do that. Now,
wow, really?
Mike Metzner had also scored a perfect score. He was the very, very first at the universe. I don't know if he scored all perfect scores in the pose down two. But that's what they had written. When I received my trophy on stage, they said I was the first to receive a perfect score underneath their new judging system that they had.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So to top it all off of winning the world title and scoring a perfect score, really capped off my amateur career. I couldn't have asked for anything better. I know I was blessed by having the perfect bone structure and a huge rib cage and a small waist and all of the things that, you know, God gave to me, things that, you know, at that point, at that level, if you don't have, could be the difference of winning and not winning, or scoring a perfect score or not scoring a perfect score. It's not that other guys haven't come along and dedicated and worked hard and studied and did all the things I did. I think I was just blessed with great genes and a great bone structure and blessed with great parents and the people around me. So
what was the trip
was
like?
To Bruges?
Yeah. What was that trip like with going with the other team?
It was very cool. I mean, I'd never been overseas. Bruges was a Belgium, and Bruges, Belgium was a beautiful place. Not a gum wrapper, not a cigarette butt. The people would come out on Sunday and wash their half of the street down. The cleanliness, and I had a police officer that was dedicated to driving me around, and the week that we're over there, each of us had our own chauffeurs, pretty much.
Wow, and, no kidding.
I'd have camera equipment and stuff in the car, and, we'd leave the car and it'd be unlocked, and I'd say to him, I says, "Don't you think we should lock it?" He goes, "Well, if it make you feel better, we can, but we don't need to here." I went, "Wow." And they take two-hour break for lunch. Uh-huh. I went into a store to find a twist bar so I could do my twists at night. And I just needed a broom handle that I could, buy in a store. I walked into a hardware store. There's no one there. I walked in the front door. They didn't even lock the front door of the store. I'm in the store looking around. I all of a sudden realize there's nobody here. And I realize, hell, everybody's out for lunch. So that was pretty cool. And another neat thing there, though, that Arnold was working for CBS at the time. And Arnold, so there was a couple years there I didn't see Arnold anymore. I'd seen him those 2 years that I'd went up to Columbus, Ohio, and he was gracious enough to spend the time he did with me. But now he's working for CBS, and he's covering the dang thing. And so after I win the competition, Arnold
has me come out to the square there in Bruges, Belgium, and he's interviewing me for CBS. And he said, look at you. He said, you know, I knew you when you hadn't won anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yet this was your dream.
Yeah.
And now you've done it.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, you know, it feels amazing, Arnold. It feels amazing. But, you know, I even did it one better. And this was the little smart ass in me at the time. And he goes, what do you mean? He says, well, Arnold, I scored the first perfect score. And Arnold gave me that look that he does where he has one eye wide open and the eyes all up.
Right.
And he gave me that look, and it was the first time I heard, I had Arnold silent. And he smiled, yeah. And he says, you did. He says, you accomplished all your goals. And that was the kind of icing on the cake. And I thanked him because I said it was because of you and, you know, some of the things that I learned from you that I was able to do it so quickly. And
yeah,
I'll always be grateful for that. So,
right. Yeah, that's awesome.
So anyway,
that's so great. Yeah. You got to meet him all those years earlier and you told him what you wanted to do and then you end up doing it. And then he's the one interviewing you. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. It was like I said, the icing on the cake for me.
Right,
and
right.
That part of my career, yeah.
So let's talk about that 83 Olympia, Dale. That was your first pro show, right? Was that the first show you did as a pro?
Yeah.
The following year?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was my first pro show, yeah.
Because back then, if you won your class at the World Championships, you were automatically allowed to go to the Olympia the following year.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And they, you know, they paid my way over there, and you know, like they do everybody. And
mm-hmm.
You know, at that point, I was weighing about 182.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask that.
My other competitions, I came in at 173.5. This time, I came in about 182, just as cut. You know, I felt good. Let me count them. And I'll even count the ones I don't even count. I'll even count back to that Iowa one where I placed third, and I didn't know I was going into it
right.
A minute before. So I was on stage 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The seventh time I'd ever stepped on stage in my life.
Right.
The Olympia in Munich, Germany.
Unbelievable.
The seventh time.
That's
even
incredible.
If you count that Mr. Iowa where I had no closing routine.
Right, right.
But, so the seventh time ever.
Hmm.
And it was a little bit daunting for me. It really was. I was up there against guys that were legends in my mind. You know,
yeah.
You know Frank Zane and Samir and Bertel Fox and
yeah.
Albert Beckles, and you just go down the line. And you know, I'm weighing 182 pounds, and
mm-hmm.
I'm going on stage after Bertel Fox.
Oh, God.
Could I have picked a worse number to go by?
Right. Right.
Now we're in Germany. We're in Germany. You know, this is his backyard.
Yeah.
He is a monster.
Right.
He's a monster. And he is bringing down the house. Now I'm backstage, back behind the curtain, and I'm next. He is, I feel the roar of the crowd through the curtain, through my body,
yeah.
With Bertel on stage. Oh my God. So, you know what? I'm next. So anyway, I went out and I did my thing, but I went out with a smile on my face and I shook my head and the crowd laughed because they got it. I mean,
right.
Come on, this isn't
they
even
do.
Fair.
Right. I got to follow this guy.
Oh my God. Yeah. So anyway, I did my routine and did the competition and everything and had a chance to meet Ed Corney and,
mm-hmm.
sharing dinner with him that night after the Olympia. And,
oh, really?
And,
that's awesome.
And watched Sameer Banoot take down Frank Zane. And
yeah.
I said to myself that night, I said to myself, this is it, the end of the era that I was in.
Oh, really?
From this day forward, they may stay cut, but they're definitely going to get bigger.
Oh, okay.
I predicted that. I predicted that that night. I was right that night, and I've been right ever since. That was the end of the lean, cut Frank Zane look. I knew it was over.
Did you think that because Zane only got fourth in that show?
Yeah, I did. Sameer was much bigger. Sameer that night, there was no one that was going to beat Sameer that night. He looked that impressive. He really
was perfect.
Did.
Yeah.
You know, Bertel Fox had a meltdown. But,
did he?
You know, oh, God, yeah, he threw his trophy and, you know, he had a meltdown. Well, the reception that the crowd gave him, if I was him, I would have thought I won the darn thing.
Yeah, right.
He looked great, you know, he did, but he wasn't at that point yet, I don't think, to have taken it. Lee did good that night. You know, there was others, but I knew that the bigger was happening. And so, you know, then we did the European tour, you know, I think it was like four or five other countries we did right after the Olympia. There was Switzerland, Sweden, Denmark, I think. We ended in London, you know, there. And by the time we got to London, I was placing like sixth or seventh.
Okay.
By the time we got to London, so I'd gone from 12th at the Olympia, and I just seemed to get better. I seemed to get better. I seemed to get my feet back underneath me, myself again, gain more confidence. And as the competitions went on, my standings improved. So I was pretty happy by the end of the European tour there. So then I was ready to get ready for the next year.
Okay. So what did you do in 84? Did you compete in the Olympia again?
No, I didn't. In 1984, I snapped my right bicep off my arm.
Oh, no way. How did that happen?
I was doing flies with some dumbbells, and it wasn't heavy flies either. I think I had 60s. And I just extended my right arm out just at the elbow just a little bit too much, and I snapped the bicep off.
Ooh, wow.
And because there's been bodybuilders who have snapped that bicep off and it was over, you know. It was their biceps never were the same. They curled back up, they shrunk up. It looked like crap, you know. And for me, that was a devastating blow.
That
was a devastating blow. So when the doctor went in, he was going to go in. He says, I'm going to make a big S. I'm going to start on your forearm on the outside. I'm going to cross your elbow. And then on the inside of your bicep, I'm going to come up about 3 or 4 inches. That we're going to lay you open. We're going to find where the end of that tendon is. And then we're going to bring it back down, and we're going to tie it back down to your forearm and drill a hole in your forearm bone. And fix it that way. I said, Doc, you don't need to do that. I said, Doc, I know exactly where that tendon is. I pointed right to the center of my inner elbow at that crease where you raise your arm up, right in the crease. And I says, it's right there. I know it's right there. And he says, well, he says, you may think it's there, but I'm telling you, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to be there, Dale. I says, Doc, it's there. Don't make that big scar on my arm. I don't want that whole huge S thing on my arm if you don't have to.
Right.
And then the last thing going in before I went under on the surgery is on the table. I says, Doc, promise me you're going to make that one incision. And if it's not there, you know, okay, I get it. But I know it's going to be there. And one of my friends from back home here, his nurse was one my friend's wife. And she was in the operating room, and he cut me there, and he goes, I'll be damned. He's right, it's there.
Wow.
And so they reattached it, and then it was 6 to 7 weeks in a sling, unmovable. And then mm-hmm. it was walking my fingers up a ladder on a wall.
Yeah.
And then it was 2.5 pounds, and then it was 5 pounds. Then it was 10 pounds, then it was 15 pounds, then it was 20 pounds. And
mm-hmm.
I worked my way back, and I worked my way up to doing 70-pound dumbbell curls.
Wow. Okay.
And I never took measurements. I never did. But a good friend of mine was getting married. I didn't want to go in a sweatsuit. And so I had a suit that was tailor-made for me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, do you know what your measurements are? I says, no, I just know what my waist is. My waist is a 31. And he says, he had the tape measure around my right arm. I was standing with my arms straight down, cold at my side. And he says, well, you're going to want to know what this number is. I says, why? He says, it's 22 inches.
Wow. Holy cow. Unbelievable.
So I built my arms up to 22 inches.
Jeez.
And there was no curl back. My arm was as full as can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next competition was the Night of the Champions in New York City in 1985. Was it 85 or 86?
86, I think.
86. And so that was... that was my first time back on stage, and I'd gone through hell.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. When I tore that bicep, I thought it was over for me.
Yeah.
And so mentally and physically, I went through a lot of brick walls.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, getting back on that stage, was good. You know, I came in at 2:30 at that competition.
Wow.
That was a house.
No kidding.
I had a 31.5-inch waist. I weighed 230 at 5'9". I had 22-inch arms. I had 32-inch thighs.
Wow.
I was big, and I was still cut.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned. Now, I might not have been cut like I was when I was 173.5.
Right.
But I guarantee you I was cut. And when I went out on that stage and I did my posing routine,
mm-hmm.
New Yorkers like big guys. They love their big boys, man.
Right.
And the roar of the crowd went right through me. I mean,
wow,
I could feel my body vibrating. And I'm going to tell you, that was the best feeling I have ever had experienced because of what I had gone through.
Yeah.
And the roar of the crowd, I mean, I tell you, I wanted to cry.
Wow.
I wanted to run. I wanted to run and never stop. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was one of the greatest times of my life. That meant a lot to me. So, but I didn't do very good at that.
I'm looking at a picture. Yeah, you got like 17th or something.
Last.
I'm looking
last.
Yeah.
You can say it, John. I got last.
I'm looking at a picture of you now, Dale, on the internet, and you're huge. So this must have been from that show because you're gigantic here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And if you go on YouTube or if you check out my Facebook page, it shows me doing a posing routine
1 week before that competition.
Okay.
And
I'm gonna check that out.
Yeah, Samir Benoot saw that video and he said, Dale, if you would have looked like that at the Olympia, he said, there's no way you wouldn't have placed in the top five. He says, there's just no way.
Yeah.
That the one that Samir won, he said, there's no way you would not have placed in the top five if you looked like that. And I placed 17th at the Night of the Champions. But
why do you think they placed so low?
I don't think they knew what to do with me. The last time they see me, I'd weighed 182. I come in at 230, 22 inch arms, and I look like a building. Jim Mannion came backstage after it was all said and done. He walks up to me and he said, Dale, he says, man, he goes, you know, we haven't seen you for a while. You kind of took us by surprise, you know, but he said to me, he goes, he said, you know, you keep competing, you know, keep some hitting some shows and, you know, we'll keep moving you up in the ranks.
Hmm.
And John, that hurt. I mean, I know Jim didn't mean anything by it, but why wasn't I judged on who I was on that night?
On that day, yeah.
I mean, on that day, you know, I had a young family. I had two young boys at home. I was selfishly devoting a lot of my spare time in that to, you know, a dream of maybe that I could, you know, get to a point where I could make enough money in this sport to put them through college and to do other things. And I just went through hell of 2 years of building my body back and bringing it to this point. And I'm going to say something here that's probably going to get me in trouble, or, you know, people may say that, you know, I was just a poor loser. But I stood on that stage, John, and Jim was the head judge and his wife was judging next to him. And, you know, there were three guys on one side and her and two guys on the other side. And I watched her looking at Jim's score sheet and then putting scores down on hers. I watched the guy next to her looking at her, putting scores down. I watched the guy next to him putting. I watched this whole thing feather out from Jim on out. And these people looking at each other's score sheets. And, you know, over the years, when you read Muscle and Fitness, and they had a guy like Franco Colombo judge.
Yeah.
And I've watched this where all the judges are up at one table, and then they had this pro down here, like Franco was, in the first row of seats, and they gave them scoring sheets and judging. And they would say in magazines, see, we're professionals. You know, we're professional judges. We can see and determine things. Just because you're a pro bodybuilder or even a former Mr. Olympia Franco Colombo here, judging, don't have the same caliber that we have for the judging. I've read that, John. I can't tell you how many times when it came to different competitions where the fans were booing and, you know, somebody got put. It happens all the time. This isn't a sport that we do by time or do by measurement or weight. It's objective. I knew it. I saw the guard change when Frank Zane went down and the rest happened. Yeah. I knew what was happening. But my point is that because Franco's over here and he's using his own set of criteria, doesn't mean that he's wrong. And I feel that judges should be at least 3 feet apart from one another.
Yeah.
No judge should be looking at another judge's score sheet. Now, I will also say that Jim Mannion judged the Mr. USA. So, could it have been that Jim Mannion said, yeah, Dale wins?
maybe everybody else copied off of Jim's score sheet, and that's the way I won the Mr. USA.
Mm-hmm.
It could have easily happened that way.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's wrong in any way. If I won the USA that way, that was wrong.
Yeah, right.
I'm just saying it's wrong. I'm saying those judges should be 3 feet apart and turn in their score sheets, and that be the end of it. But see, if you're not in that group, if you're not in that grouping, you're not being wined and dined. You're not being sent all over the world to judge competitions because you're the outlier. You're not in unison with the rest of these judges.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe judges protect where they're at and what they're doing. It's a good gig, man. Going all over the world, eating at the finest places, you know,
having the
great venues, you know, being the judges and then the limelight and being there and doing all that. Anyway, that's my rant. And, you know, people can take that for what it's worth. But I had a great career, John. After that point, I didn't have anything else to prove to myself. I really didn't. I had proven myself that I could do anything that I could set my mind to. And, you know, I pretty much have done that for the rest of my life. And, you know, I'm happy that I'm 66 and I'm healthy as a horse. And, I've got grandchildren that I love to death, and I've got great kids, and life is good, and I'm still training people and loving it. You know, I miss some of my friends. You know, I miss Mike and Ray Metzner, and you know, I miss John Davis and the others that have gone before us, and it's sad. It's sad. You know, for a sport that, you know, sometimes you kind of put your life on the line here.
Yeah.
And, that doesn't need to be the case, but, it's kind of shocking what some guys are willing to do to win, you know? So, I was always underneath.
Yeah, how did you gain all that size?
You know, I started juicing, John. like everybody else, you know, but I had a great doctor. You know, I really did. I had a really good doctor. I had my family doctor. That was my doctor from when I was young. And one thing he taught me is he said, you know, just because one or two cc's will get you this big doesn't mean doubling it is going to double your size. Doubling it could just cause more damage.
Yeah.
And so your body is only going to grow so big and so fast, and the rest is damage, and you need to understand that. And that's the principle we always went off of. So I had blood workups and blood tests every 90 days.
Okay.
We made sure that my kidney and my liver and my heart rate and cholesterol levels and everything else was in line. You know, we cycled in and out, and we never stayed on more than 12 weeks and off again. And then, so I, you know, my body and the way that my body functioned and going through cycles. See, the challenge is guys don't, and they have to keep adding more and more because your own hormone cycles, your own body's testosterone stuff starts to shut off as you add more. The body tries to level itself out.
Right.
So pretty soon your body's not producing anything, and then you just keep having to add more and more and more. And pretty soon you destroy something, and the next thing you know, you're not here anymore.
And
early on, a lot of guys were guinea pigs. Let's face it. You know, we only knew what we knew. and everything else was to chance. And you know, when you spend a year of your life, it's 365 days a year, getting ready for a contest, and you know you're sometimes you're willing to do things that maybe in the rearview mirror wasn't the smartest decision to make. So
right,
I always listen closely to my doctor. I never did growth, never did any of that, but yet I still had 22-inch arms and 32-inch thighs and a 31-inch waist.
Yeah.
So just that. It was amazing to me when I was in the pros and the pros that I talked to that were not under any doctor's care at all.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just doing
nothing. None. They had no clue what was happening to their liver or their kidney or anything else. They were literally flying blindly. And I thought that when you're at that pinnacle in your career, that you would have the foresight and the knowledge and the wisdom to be smarter than that.
Yeah, right.
And I found out that a lot of them just were flying by the seat of their pants.
So the difference, Dale, between, you know, when you were competing in the USA and the universe and all that, between then and when you got really, really big, was what you were just using more often, like throughout the year?
Yeah. I was cycling in and out all year long, you know, 12 weeks in, six weeks out, 12 weeks in, 6 weeks out. You know, to get my own hormone level back up to where it was normally and then cycle again and then work at getting my own hormone level back up to normal and cycling again. And so that's the way it was. But I remember being in the sauna with Lee, and we were in the sauna in Bruges, Belgium, and Lee asked me what I was on. And, you know, I told him, I explained it to him and everything. And he kind of got a little upset with me, it seemed. He said, that's all right, Dale. You know, if you don't want to tell me, that's fine. I mean, you know, I understand. You don't have to. I said, Lee, this is what I'm taking. He goes, okay, all right, fine. I don't think he ever believed me. And I was being completely honest with him. And he thought that we were friends enough that I would be truthful with him. And I was.
Right.
he wasn't buying it.
Right.
but Lee, God bless Lee. I just love him to death. And he was one of those guys in the sport that I am truly thankful for meeting and getting to know him and Shirley and getting to know who he was as a man
I always
cherish that.
Right. Yeah. Well, you had an amazing career, Dale. So I want to thank you for joining us and telling us about it. I really love this interview because I could really feel your passion and your motivation when you're talking about how you got ready for these shows and how you had that goal of being, you know, first Mr. Iowa and then Mr. America. So it was really great to hear your story. And I've admired you since I saw you in that 81 Central USA. And then, of course, saw you win the universe and everything. So it's been great getting to know you and talking to you today.
Well, John, I appreciate you inviting me on and allowing me to go down memory lane.
Right.
you know, at times, John, honestly, at this point in my life, I look back and I almost think it was a dream. It happened so quickly. It happened so quickly, and I was over so quick. I was on and I was there, and then I wasn't. You know. So it wasn't like I had a 20-year span or whatever in the sport. So sometimes when I think back upon it, I honestly have to shake my head and just think, you know, I did it. I really did do that. Thanks for letting me go down memory lane, John. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. We really loved hearing your story. Thanks a lot, Dale.
All right, John. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks for Dale Ruplinger for taking some time to interview with us. I really appreciated this interview. You had a great interview. Next week, hopefully, we'll be joined by the great Troy Zuccolato, who won the MPC Nationals way back in 1989. So keep your fingers crossed, and hopefully Troy can join us for that show. I also want to thank our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Stay warm out there, everybody, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.